Hey, good day, everybody, and welcome again to another great episode of the OIG Roundtable. We're short one today. Jason is working on a project, so he is not available. But Wade is back, so I'm glad to see Wade back. He shaved off his beard because Kris Kringle is taking spring break. And up in the North Pole where Wade is, it's a balmy, probably 20 degrees. So it's almost t-shirt weather for Wade. So Wade, glad to have you back. For those that don't remember or need, this is your first time maybe coming to one of our podcasts. Wade McFall. I always say it's Wade McFall because I'm a New Yorker and I say it the way it should be pronounced, not the way it's spelled because that's silly. Wade, retired assistant special agent in charge from HHS OIG and is one of our SIU leads with one of our Medicaid contracts. Matt Kachansky, retired senior executive from HHS OIG, retired from the Northeast UPIC, and is one of our managers here on our SIU team. Jason Eisengrind is missing today because he's working on another project. And we got a special guest. And staying with our theme of payment integrity, program integrity, is Dale Carr. Dale has a great career. I met Dale a couple of months ago at a Medicaid payment integrity conference. Dale is with the state of Missouri's Medicaid program. I'm going to let Dale tell you a little bit more about himself, but I had a great conversation with Dale, so much so that I thought it'd be great to have him be part of one of our conversations today because it's really all about payment integrity and program integrity. And Dale has a really long history in that outside of his prior law enforcement career. So Dale, give everybody that tunes in our podcast the thumbnail sketch of who you are and what are you doing now?
So thank you, Eric, and a real pleasure to join you here today. It was a pleasure to meet you at the conference there and been following you on LinkedIn since then, and you're a very busy person there. But anyway, I do appreciate the opportunity to join you today. So I am currently the program integrity director for Missouri Medicaid. We call it audit and compliance here in Missouri. Previously, I was a special agent with the Coast Guard for 20 years. I did stints with the United States Office of Special Counsel and with the U.S. Attorney's Office out in San Francisco. I was a street cop for about 8 years. I've been with the state of Missouri for 12 years now. I've been the director of our program integrity unit since 2017, so about 6 years.
And you know, before we kind of get to the hot seat of, you know, talking about what we're going to talk about, how many investigators do you have, and you know, sort of what is their purview?
Yeah, so we have I have 10 investigators that are assigned to my unit. I have 81. People total. I have about 25 people in our enrollment unit. I have about 25 to 30 auditors, of which about 6 or 7 of those are nurses. And then the rest of our folks are, you know, finance admin types, do all the suspensions and terminations of providers and stuff like that. But yeah, I have an investigations manager, a lead investigator, and then I have about 8 or 9 investigators that are spread around the state of Missouri.
And your investigators are not law enforcement, but many of them, and we talked about this, have that prior law enforcement background. Am I remembering correctly?
You're correct. Yeah, I basically, most of them are retired detectives or, senior law enforcement before they came to us, but definitely experienced investigators, good investigative skills, before they came to us. It works well for us.
And having a lot of people with that background really does help from a liaisoning perspective, right? Because a lot of the stuff that you're doing is you're interacting with state Medicaid fraud control units, attorney general's offices, U.S. attorneys, maybe the OIG, maybe the FBI. So having some people in positions where they kind of speak both languages is definitely a plus, right?
Oh, absolutely. And the guys, they're not gun carrying, investigators, but they know how to prepare probable cause statements. They testify before, you know, state and federal grand juries and such like that. So, good talent there.
Yeah. So I want to start with a little bit of discussion with you, and I want to bring Wade into this because Wade spends a lot of his day outside of doing the SIU work and identifying cases and all of that. A lot of those cases that he's identifying then result in conversations with the Mufukus and this and that. And, you know, one of the things that we've been talking a lot about internally is sort of the divergence of mission, really goals, right? On the MCO, the payer side, there really is this focus on recovering dollars, but it comes at a price, right? It's we're not going to show you ours, you're not going to show us yours. So Wade, I know you spend a lot of time having these interactions with the Medicaid Fraud Division for the states and the OMIGs and the Mufukus and this and that. What do you see as being one of the biggest things that kind of sticks in your cross, so to speak, with respect to the that important relationship that has to exist?
Well, I think you nailed it on the head. There's a different focus, almost like a 180 from, not necessarily 180, but the focus is very different from my previous experience as law enforcement, where our main goal was really to, there was a bunch of different things you could do with the case and different resolutions, but the primary goal was generally to get a criminal conviction. So that was our focus, and it was less on recovering dollars. We certainly did have cases that if they didn't meet the evidentiary values that you needed in a criminal case, and yet that goes into proving intent and those things, you could always take it civilly and recover money or even administratively. But our goal was always to end up ideally with the criminal conviction. And in the MCO world, I'm learning that that's really not the goal. And it's taken me a while to kind of, realize that and figure it out and look at referrals and investigations with a different eye, with a different goal in mind. So it's just quite different. I mean, you still need the same kind of investigative skills, but between the different focus and all the intricacies of a corporate world and different companies out there, I'm sure each MCO has their own unique qualities that are a little bit challenging for someone coming in from the government. But that's the main thing, is really just the focus away from criminal referrals, which we still do them. We refer stuff to the Mufuku and other more law enforcement related agencies. So that's still part of it, but it's not the focus. And that's something that's taken me a while to realize. I didn't just start working in that field and realize that, okay, now the game has changed and it's all about referrals. It took a while to figure that out.
Yeah. And Dale, you're spending a lot of time interacting with your state MCOs, your Medicaid plans. And, we were talking before we got the recording going that sometimes it's a little bit like herding cats, right? Because everybody's a little bit aligned differently. A plan that has exposure may not want to share that information with another plan because they want to get that money back, right? So, I know you run a lot of these information sharing. There's quarterly meetings with CMS, things of that sort. What are some of the things that you're doing in Missouri to either absolve some of the feeling of the trepidations that these MCOs may have about information sharing, right? Because for you, it's about getting that money in the door, and you want that information sharing because you want plans to work together. And that's the biggest challenge, right? What are some of the things that you're doing to work to bring these people together versus the divergence that exists?
Well, I think that, and thanks, Eric. We had talked about a little bit beforehand, but I think that one of the things that we're doing in Missouri that is not necessarily happening in a lot of other states is the types of meetings that we do have. So now Missouri only has three managed care organizations that are contracted with the state Medicaid agency. So what we're doing works well in Missouri, but I don't know if it would necessarily work as well in a larger state like California or somewhere where they have a lot more plans that are contracted with the state. But you know, having only three of them, so we do quarterly meetings with the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, with my you know, myself and my investigative team, and then the SIUs from all three of the managed care plans. And we've been doing this now for about 3 years when we first started them up. And so that they're quarterly, they're planned out, they're scheduled well in advance. We have, you know, a set agenda. We encourage, we set up a training topic for each meeting. That kind of gets shared around. So, you know, my turn this time, your turn next time, we'll do a specific training topic in a specific area. But from the get-go, when we started doing these, was, you know, the idea was this, you know, that we just really need to do a lot better at the information sharing. We're all living here in the same state. We need to work together, you know, to make the biggest dent in what's going on with, you know, with some of these providers. And so, you know, just like the training thing I'll mention right there, you know, that the SIUs have some very talented people. And so, you know, like one of the training topics, you know, in one of our quarterly meetings, we have a SIU investigator that is really top notch around chiropractors. And so, you know, she did a really nice, you know, PowerPoint presentation, 15, 20 minutes or whatever, just, you know, really going top to bottom on, you know, because Missouri was just getting ready to start enrolling chiropractors. And so here's, you know, here's what you're going to want to be watching for. And, you know, this is, you know, this is what's going to happen. You know, when you take a look at these folks, and so that was, you know, that was really nice. And again, I think it encourages that, you know, that exchange. So we have the meeting. You know, we encourage everybody to participate. You know, if they have a case that they want to talk about, you know, we ask that they you know, let us know ahead of time. They get, you know, give us the NPI so we can get it on the agenda so that everybody can research that NPI before the meeting. Because, you know, if somebody mentions it during the meeting and then they, hey, can you throw the NPI in the chat? And then, you know, everybody copies it down. And then 2 weeks later, you know, they go and they may or may not, you know, go and check on it or whatever. So we're looking for that, you know, to be included, you know, on the front end. And again, it's just really, I think it's a much more, you know, collaborative meeting. You know, to your point, I mean, we see that, you know, the SIUs will put together a really good case. They've got a pretty large overpayment identified. They'll, you know, they'll make their, you know, required referral to the state Medicaid, you know, agency, which would be us, and to the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit at the same time. We usually give them a FUCU right of first refusal if they want to open a case on that. But in Missouri, we have an insurance regulation that basically only allows private insurers, they only have 12 months essentially to recoup any overpayments. And so that's a pretty tight timeline for them. By the time they identify their, you know, their review sample, they do their audit, and they get to their findings. And so what we'll do a lot of times is we'll say, listen, go ahead and, you know, my unit and the MFUCU will give them the nod, say, go ahead and, you know, go ahead and recoup your overpayment there. You know, you're only looking at claims for your plan. So if we want to do something with them, then we'll, you know, we'll expand on the claims that were filed with the other plans or with the fee for service or, you know, what they're doing, you know, private pay, you know, Medicare, you know, the whole bit there. And so I think that, you know, that kind of works. But we've had a lot of success in that. But again, I think part of it is, you know, again, only having three plans, it's kind of a limited type of thing. And real quickly, we do a separate meeting each quarter with each plan. So my unit, the state Medicaid agency, which is Mo HealthNet, and then each plan separately, we have a separate meeting, and they're program integrity related, but the plan will have their CEO, their compliance officer, and their SIU folks there. I will bring in more than my investigators. I'll bring in my enrollment. I'll bring in my provider review. I'll bring in my suspensions terminations manager, and then the Medicaid fraud control unit, you know, can be on there too, you know, with their folks. And so those are more focused on what that specific plan is doing. And we can talk more freely with regards to if they're, you know, if they need to pick up the pace on referrals or if there's any specific problems related to their plan, we're not airing that with, you know, one of the other plans. And so, you know, those occur about 1 week apart from each other, but once a quarter. And again, they're all, you know, there's an agenda, there's a, you know, there's a training, you know, again, there's a training part of each meeting. It's all documented so that, you know, when CMS comes in every 4 years and does one of their focused reviews on, you know, MCO program integrity, you know, we've got all that documentation about, you know, what we're doing. We've got all the statistics that we've pulled together, you know, each quarter with regards to, you know, how many referrals, what types of referrals, you know, how many of them were accepted by the, you know, by the state Medicaid agency or by the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit. And it's working well in Missouri.
Yeah, that's a lot of good information. So the couple of things that I got as the take homes, and I'm going to turn this over to Matt because we're going to talk a little about that piece of the puzzle, which is a little bit is the training and the importance of that is the one thing that I like that you said is you guys were gearing up to enroll chiropractors in the program. So you gave investigators information about what the potential frauds were going to be before they got in, which is actually a great idea, right? You're not really putting the cart before the horse. You know, it's not that you're picking on chiropractors, but, you know, if there's an opportunity to make money, there's going to be an opportunity for it to be potentially, you know, fraudulent. So that's an important piece of that. You know, the one thing that and we've done here at Advise, we've done a ton of training in the SIU space to kind of create that level set, which you really need. You know, we did some training a few years ago for a plan, 20 investigators in the room. And if you asked a question and you solicited a response, the 20 investigators would give you 65 different answers, right? So, you know, the amount of inconsistency, you know, was pretty prevalent. And so it is important to kind of keep that level set. It sounds to an extent though, that when you're doing these collective meetings, that you're really doing something that's mirroring what CMS does on the Medicare side with the UPICs, which is the MCCs, the major case coordination. And Matt was intrinsically involved with those as the director. He'd be on the hot seat for those. So, you know, Matt, let's talk a little about that. And sure. Like, you know, what comes out of those MCCs and does that really, and you did a lot of work on the Medicaid side because the UPICs have to do a lot of work with referrals and such, but, you know, does stuff come out of those that is, you know, is it valuable?
Well, it is valuable, absolutely, because you get every player in the room at the same time. I'll talk on the Medicare side first. You have CMS, you got Department of Justice, U.S. Attorney's Offices, OIG. In some instances, you have FBI. I think with the medic, they would bring in DEA. So you had all these people, and then you would present your cases, and it would be... There was set criteria for what cases to present, you know, whether they be eligible for administrative action or what in the eyes of the UPIC, whether they thought they were good for a referral to the OIG. And you would present these things and decisions were made at the meeting as to how those cases would be resolved. OIG and DOJ had right of first refusal. Yeah, give it to us. And if they gave it to us, then it was like, okay. And going to your point, Dale, even though they're going to take it for a criminal investigation, CMS and UPIC or the MACs, go ahead and take your administrative actions. That's not going to compromise our case. So, you know, we're satisfied that we're able to do our administrative actions, get that ROI to CMS, and then the OIG and DOJ would do with it what they could. And then bring it back perhaps for even more administrative actions of revocation, exclusion, whatever. And so it was very good to have that happen. And cases got resolved in an hour. And the interesting thing about the MCC was once those decisions were made, the UPICs are on the hook to get the stuff done in 2 days. So these things did not languish. Yeah. So that, you know, the whole problem about why these things take so long, a lot of that was taken care of through this MCC process, which was great.
Well, you said that cases got resolved in an hour, so it's like an episode of Law and Order, right? I mean, everything was taken care of, you know, within an hour. But so, Matt, I want to go back to Dale because one of the things that you talked about is this whole premise of referrals, and you know, and when Wade, Matt, and I, by the way, could talk forever about the referral process that comes right to the OIG from the UPix or the Medic, quality of referrals. You know, one of the things that, you know, has happened over the years is the quality of referrals got better because you start telling the people making the referrals what you want. You know, there were times when you would get a referral from, you know, before it was the UPIC, when it was the program safeguard contractors or whoever it was, and they would send you in hard copy bound form, you'd get a 3-volume document of referral, and 95% of it was absolutely useless information. It was an accurate report, LexisNexis, clear, that was 6 months old, that was 170 pages. Like, I don't, you know, we don't need this. So, you know, let's talk a little bit and let's spend the last little bit of time, because this is an important piece of the puzzle, is the MCOs have a obligation under, right, state law in the CMS world, they have an obligation under their contract and the regulatory piece to make referrals as required or as needed to either the Mifugu or to you. What sort of work have you guys been doing to ensure that the referrals that are coming in are one, consistent? And I don't mean consistent in the type of case, but I mean consistent in what are the things that you're looking for in that format? And what sort of evolution do you see those referral packets coming, going forward?
Yeah, we, part of it was a follow-up to, one of these CMS focus reviews that we had back in 2019. But I really think that we had a major reset with our SIUs and the three plans there about 3 years ago. And one of the things that we did was to take that, you know, that referral form, and really, you know, get rid of the stuff that we didn't need and really get down. It's essentially a one-page form that they can expand out as much as they want to. But it, you know, the form specifically asks for the information that, you know, we need to make a determination on whether we want to do something with it. And it's got, obviously, it's got those key identifiers and stuff, or, you know, if there's specific procedure codes or if there's specific, you know, what's the scheme here per se, right? And what specifically are you identifying? And then it comes over and then again, we, you know, we collaborate very closely with the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit. Is this something that they want to take? And if they say no, then we're going to say, do we want to audit this? Do we want to investigate it? And if it's a yes, you know, we'll let them know. If it's a no, then it's, you know, they're going to go ahead and go back to them. But, you know, it doesn't do any good to be getting a bunch of referrals that are just regurgitated, you know, from things that, you know, we sent an overpayment, we sent them a copy of an overpayment letter that we sent to a provider off of one of our audits. And then they write, you know, they check their records and then they find a little something. And so then they do a referral back to us. And, you know, to your point. And so it was, like I say, it was really just getting down to what exactly needs to be on that referral form. You know, again, talking about quality referrals, and then working kind of on the quantity type of thing, right? And part of that had to do with what Missouri did, with a lot of other states did, was about 3 years ago, we put some contract language in where each plan had to have at least one investigator in state for every 100,000 lives covered, under the Missouri plan. And so, you know, some of the plans, they were national, they were in, you know, 30, 40 states, and their SIU folks were 4 or 5 states away from us, right? And we wanted people that were, you know, in Missouri, work in Missouri cases, that we could actually go out and sometimes we'll go out and audit with them. We'll go out and do interviews with them. Some of these SIU investigators are people that used to work for the state Medicaid program, and they switched over, you know, to the MCO, you know, due to some excellent benefits there. But, I think that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, that's an important piece, the consistency. You know, and Wade, when you were in ASAC, a lot of the complaints or the referrals would come in and you've got to vet them to identify or giving it to an agent. And, you know, I know, you know, when I was an agent, you would get a referral and it would look like, you know, whatever. And then you'd get a referral a week later from somewhere else and it looked totally different. Or my favorite was when we would get a complaint that needed to be vetted more. and we would send it to the Z-Pick, the U-Pick, the Medic, whatever it was, and then they would turn and flip it back as what they called an immediate advisement a week later because it met their criteria for an immediate advisement, and you'd say, I just sent this to you like a week later. So, and I think some of those bugs have been worked out, but, you know, Wade, for sure, I can surmise that there was a level of frustration on getting referrals in which the consistency just wasn't there. And, you know, like if there was consistency, right? I mean, it's got to be at the forefront of your mind is like another referral is one thing, but another referral in which I've got to reinvent the wheel each time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And we would have kind of almost like this was pre-MCC that we would have quarterly meetings with the PSCs, as you mentioned, or the Z-Picks or the U-Picks as they progressed in their naming. but it was nice to have the agents from the PSC or the Z-Pick or the investigators, I should say, in the room, like, and they would pitch their case again. Their whole goal was to get us to accept it. So that was like a check in the win column. If we say, yeah, we want it. If we said, no, it's not what we're looking for, they'd have to look to do something else with it. But you would be in the room with them and we could ask them to readjust their focus or give me more background, or you could kind of have them tune up the referral before you accepted it and basically say, if you can show me A, B, and C, you know, we'll work it. So it was much like the MCC, but pre-MCC, and it was on a smaller scale where it would be just me as the ASAC. A lot of times I'd have a couple agents come in just to hear the pitch from the investigators. And then they would have, you know, four or five investigators pitch in one or two cases each. So it was a couple hours. It was good for the agents and the investigators. I looked at it kind of as a educational, you know, couple hours where they get to see, my agents get to see what the investigators are working on and vice versa. The agents can say, well, we're seeing this in the field. We're doing a lot of work with, you know, marketers or cappers, and we're doing undercovers in the street. So it was good for both sides to see what the other side was doing. And I think that was a value to those quarterly meetings.
Yeah. So Matt, just to go back to you for a minute, talking about the MCC stuff and that information, you know, sharing, did you find that as time went on that the ability to produce either a better referral or a more consistent referral was really coming to fruition, that it really wasn't this hodgepodge?
There's positives and negatives to it. Similar to what Dale did in Missouri in creating a referral form that caught that catches all the germane facts, CMS had that as part of the MCC. The problem with MCC is it is a treadmill. You meet every 30 days and you've got to bring new cases every 30 days that meet this criteria. Some of that criteria is just for administrative actions because you haven't had time to really fully vet and fully investigate the case. So a lot of the cases that were brought to MCC were probably premature. So the referrals were sort of bare bones. And Wade, you brought up a great point about the quarterly meetings. Those still happen between the UPICs and the OIG, but we're not allowed to talk specific cases because that would mitigate or compromise what goes on at MCC because, you know, they want to present those cases to the wider audience and not have the OIG say, no, we don't want that thing. And then it doesn't go to MCC. So we talk, data projects and priorities and things like that, but never specific cases. So we miss that little bit of element there of, you know, what are you guys doing? What, you know, hey, if you're going to do that, yeah, move that forward quicker or whatever. We miss that now.
So you're basically telling us that it was basically like healthcare fight club. No one talks about healthcare fraud.
It was a lot like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dale, you know, we're coming close to our time, and I want to give you some, just like the final thing on this. So I know one of the things that we've talked about this, one of the things that you've done is you've got a contract with a really good data analytics company. So you're getting really good referrals. You're getting really good leads off of your data analytics tool. That's obviously a really big step in a positive direction. What are some of the other things, if you had your wish list and somebody from the governor's office of your great state called you up and said, Dale, I'm going to send you a blank check And you can, you know, give me your wish list of what would your, you know, your two or three priorities be, because nothing is free. You know, I had an economics professor in macroeconomics. He would say there's no such thing as a free lunch. And so, you know, what are the, if you had a two or three just quick little bullet point priorities, where would you like to see your program, your investigative program dollars go in the next couple of years?
Well, I appreciate the question there. It's you know, it's always careful what you ask for there sometimes, I think. But you know, you did mention, like I say, we have really, really top notch data analytics platform, and we have just more actionable leads than I have the bandwidth. And so obviously I've got new decision items before the legislature right now, asking, you know, for more auditors and for more you know, more investigators and such like that. We're nowhere near the point of diminishing returns. You know, if you and I don't call us a revenue. I call us a revenue saving agency, because all those dollars we bring back can be used somewhere else in the Medicaid program, you know, in a needed area there. But we do, you know, I would like to see us be able to, you know, expand our footprint a little bit and our bandwidth. And we're farming out our leads. We're farming our leads out to the UPIC. We've got a proof of concept with them where we've given them cases that meet their criteria. And we're also, we're taking a look at these actionable leads, and we're looking at, you know, if a particular MCO has a larger exposure than the other two or fee for service, then we're basically writing it up and sending it over to them and saying, hey, you guys are getting beat up the worst by this particular provider. Would you please, you know, take a look at this? And so that, you know, again, it's encouraging the teamwork. It's expanding our, our bandwidth right there. And it's probably a conversation for another day, but, you know, our provider enrollment unit is really, and our audit group and our investigations group, they're all located here together. And I see them as totally one, you know, team. We spend a lot of time in Missouri, probably more than any other state, I would say, trying to keep the bad providers from ever getting in our system in the first place. And so, again, I have over at the legislature right now for a brand new provider enrollment solution that will really upgrade our game there in the provider enrollment area, and help us, you know, with what we're trying to do there. But you know, that's huge when you can, you know, when they never get the opportunity to, right, you know, begin billing you in the first place. I don't think that, you know, folks spend enough time, you know, thinking about that sometimes. So we're working with the governor's office. We have a lot of support over there to do what we can. We established a Medicaid, a governor's Medicaid program integrity task force, which we have all of the, you know, the MCOs and MFUCU and a lot of other state agencies are involved in that. So again, just, you know, a lot of different things that we could do.
Yeah. Well, and the challenge, CMS has been challenged for many, many years with keeping the bad providers out before they get in, right? You know, CMS invests hundreds of millions of dollars in programs like advanced provider screening and NPAS and all of that, PAYCOS. They all work kind of symbiotically together. But yeah, I mean, it's a big struggle, you know, and on our end, where we have seen a lot of that is the problems that you're having is that there's no lack of cases. There's a lack of bandwidth for people. And, you know, we're doing that, you know, a lot of the work that we do on our SIU team, which is kind of how we met, was, you know, working to help facilitate to expand that bandwidth at a reasonable price without having to, you know, kind of go all in to right. Be able to make sure that those valuable program dollars are really there. Because at the end of the day, you know, there's only so much, you know, you go in your pocket, at some point you're pulling out lint, right? And you've got to be able to make sure that your pocket can still have a few bucks to pay for those providers, particularly when you're starting to bring on board, you know, something like chiropractic as a specialty you didn't pay for. Now you're paying for a line item that you didn't previously pay for. So it sounds like you guys are doing some, you know, a lot of the stuff you're doing is taking a novel approach to some things. Some of it is saying, hey, you know, CMS is doing this already. We're going to do something similar because, you know, why reinvent the wheel? Let's just make the wheel go better, right? I mean, let's just oil it and get it going. So, yeah. Dale, this has been great. We could spend. I know we had a list of agenda items that would take us 3 hours to get through. And I still even think then we could have had a ton more to talk about. So it was great having you on. We're going to schedule a time to have you back again because it is really important for people who are tuning into our podcast to see that, you know, a lot of this is grassroots. It really is at the state level. State Medicaid programs get beaten up on a daily basis about their inability to police themselves. And so it's good to have somebody on who's helping to run a program and do it from that perspective. You've got a great law enforcement background, getting to meet you and getting to meet people on your team, just seeing that you guys are really trying to do the absolute best you can to make sure that those bad providers are adjudicated, you know, properly. So I appreciate having you on. I look forward to talking to you again about this more. Matt, always great having you. Wade, always great having you. Next time I see you, Wade, I'm sure the beard will be totally gone because it'll be 40 degrees and you'll be in a tank top. And, you know, but I think the pool in Wisconsin, you open that pool up April 1st. So, it's good having you. For those of you that are getting this, I appreciate you all tuning in. Again, if you want to get our newsletter, you can get it by just signing up through hello, H-E-L-L-O, at advise, A-D-V-I-Z-E, health.com. You can get our weekly newsletter. Again, all of our podcasts, recordings of our LinkedIn Live after they are live. You can get those on our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, look for Advise Health. You can find us there. You can find us on Spotify. As always, I appreciate everyone taking the time out of their day. Dale, again, thank you so much for being on. We really enjoyed having you. I look forward to having you on again. Wade and Matt, I'll see you next time. Thanks again, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you all.